pitching rotation tonight. Lilly is the scheduled starter as the Cubs begin a West Coast road trip in San Diego against the Padres. Mark Burley hasn't won a start since his perfect game last month against Tampa Bay. Burley will be on the mound tonight when the Chicago White Sox open a series with the Kansas City Royals at U.S. Cellular Field. Colts defensive end Raheem Brock is expected to miss the rest of the preseason after breaking his left hand Friday night. The Colts also practiced today without Pro Bowl defensive end Robert Mathis. The coach, Jim Caldwell, said Mathis has a bruised thigh. Caldwell did not say when Mathis would return to practice. The Colts host the Eagles on Thursday night. And at camp today in Terre Haute, Indiana, the head of the NFL Players Association said that players should be braced for a possible lockout in 2011. Executive Director DeMaurice Smith told reporters at Colts camp today he's convinced owners will lock players out when the current labor deal expires after next season. Smith made no demands for a new deal and expressed his willingness to discuss everything, including changes in the league's disciplinary policy. The one caveat, he wants to know why owners backed out of the collective bargaining agreement. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designer of the Carle Foundation's Echo Building, on the web at ratioarchitects.com.
Officials with the Federal Reserve say they're committed to returning to Washington with proposals for modifying mortgage loans and foreclosure mediation. But they also want to hear more from communities hit the hardest by the mortgage crisis. In Decatur over the weekend, about 500 people from the region heard from the enterprise that creates monetary policy. They also had a chance to apply pressure for changes in lending practices. AM 580's Jeff Bossert reports.
Leanne Tace nearly lost her home in Monticello last year after she and her husband had both experienced job losses. 3 years ago, they'd fallen behind in mortgage payments when paying her mother's funeral expenses. When she tried to modify her loan, Tace said she played phone tag with GMAC Mortgage, but no one could give her a straight answer. And as it turns out, house payments went up by $500 a month instead of going down. Tay says she, her husband, and five daughters were faced with foreclosure as a result.
There's a great need for better communication between lenders and homeowners, a standard of quality that the lenders should be held accountable so that the homeowners have an opportunity to be treated fairly and objectively and have their voices heard. Thank you.
Tay spoke in a crowded Decatur Civic Center auditorium Saturday. She said the Central Illinois Organizing Project intervened on her family's behalf and negotiated mortgage payments to a level they could afford. The faith-based organization was among those responsible for setting up the Fed's tour of 9 U.S. cities in an effort to revamp the Community Reinvestment Act. Three leaders with the Federal Reserve were also in Decatur, where the CIOP chose to show statistics of massive foreclosures, many the result of adjustable rate or subprime mortgages, with a high percentage of the loans going to minorities or the elderly. But not everyone is blaming the Fed for the current state of affairs. Brad Berry of Decatur was in the audience. He said while banks deserve their share of the blame, he wants to know where the government has been all this time.
Why doesn't Congress take the responsibility for this economic downturn? They're supposed to be watching these institutions. They were supposed to be in the watchdogs and, you know, taking care of us. And to me, I think Congress fell down on the job.
Anna Alvarez-Boyd is the Associate Director for the Fed's Division of Consumer and Community Affairs. She calls Decatur a special case compared to other places she's seen on this tour, cities like Richmond, California, Buffalo, and Cincinnati.
There's a tougher picture for jobs, and then you also have the problem that a lot of programs that we have, it's much more difficult to make them work in rural communities. Low-income housing tax credits have always been difficult. Now it's even harder. And you often have, you know, less capacity in nonprofits in rural communities. And so it makes the stress of this kind of financial crisis even tougher.
Boyd says the Fed needs to continue talking with Central Illinois cities like Decatur, where resources are scarce, and there's a need for partnerships with banks like the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. And to avoid what happened to people like Leanne Tace, Boyd says lenders need to be better prepared to deal with the large number of loan modifications they're seeing. Political journalist and author William Greider says the Fed is embattled in a way he hasn't seen for generations. But the columnist, who delivered Saturday's keynote address, says there's reason for optimism that its members will no longer take on the dated image of a secret temple where decisions are made.
The more pressure they get from people, groups like these, the more vulnerable they're going to be to some kind of reform. It may or may not be responsive to all of the complaints these people are making, but it will at least kind of bring the Federal Reserve in out of the cold and say, look, you've got an obligation to the country, not just to the banking system, and you better start acting on it or something more drastic will happen to your status.
Like Brad Berry, Greider says it's time for Congress, as well as President Obama, to step in and exercise more oversight over the Fed. The Central Illinois Organizing Project directed other initiatives at the Fed that it wants taken before Chairman Ben Bernanke. Members want it to give banks an unsatisfactory rating if they support payday lenders who charge annual interest rates of more than 36%. And the CIOP wants the Fed's Board of Governors to support the development of a consumer financial protection agency. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
It's 2:46. This is the Afternoon Magazine. President Obama is on a tour of western states to talk about his proposals for a health care overhaul. Yesterday, he took a break and with his family took in the breathtaking views of the Grand Canyon, where they saw lots of ponderosa pine trees. If you're trying to imagine a ponderosa pine, just think of old westerns or reruns of Bonanza. An hour south of the canyon, you will find the largest swath of ponderosas. They stretch from the high desert of northern Arizona all the way to New Mexico. Arizona Public Radio's Daniel Crocker found that these trees have some secrets.
A great place to see the ponderosas is in the Coconino National Forest just outside Flagstaff. As you look around the forest, you'll notice some trees have black bark, but others are yellow.
Early lumbermen coming through here thought they were actually two different species.
Steve Hurst with the U.S. Forest Service is leading a summer hiking tour through these ponderosas.
And they call these blackjack pines, and the yellow ones they call the yellow pine.
But they're the same tree. The yellow ones are just older, says Hurst. At around 120 years, that's a mere teenager for a ponderosa, they begin to shed their black bark and reveal a yellowish interior. That's why locals call them yellow bellies.
A lot of people wonder, why do they turn color like this?
Well, foresters don't really know why. And there's something else odd that starts to happen. But you have to stick your nose into the crevice of the bark to find out. These hikers have now entered a long-standing controversy here in northern Arizona. What is that smell?
What do you think?
I think butterscotch.
Butterscotch, okay.
With a hint of vanilla.
And there wasn't much consensus.
Cinnamon for sure.
Cinnamon?
That's definitely cinnamon.
I think it smells like coconut.
I smelled butterscotch. We're told the scent, whatever it is, probably comes from a chemical in the sap being warmed by the sun. And this flaky, thick bark we've just had our noses wedged in is also the secret to the tree's defense against fire.
When the lightning hits the tree, it just flash boils the sap, and it just blows the bark off. It doesn't even burn the tree.
That's good, because this area, at 7,000 feet, has one of the highest rates of lightning strikes in the country.
During the height of the monsoon season, the storm season here in the summer, there's lots of lightning strikes, lots of fire starts, burning away the competition and leaving the ponderosas in charge.
At least that's the way it should be. But for much of the past century, fires in this ponderosa forest have been suppressed. As a result, it's become choked with too much vegetation. And it's this overgrowth, says Steve Hurst, that's made some recent fires rage out of control, endangering the pines.
When these crowns of these trees burn and you destroy an entire stand, they may never come back.
Which is why the U.S. Forest Service, in collaboration with environmental groups and timber companies, is now thinning out trees and setting prescribed fires so the ponderosas can continue to reign over this stretch of the Southwest.
Here is probably the grandest place in all of the ponderosa forest. We're standing among 100-foot-high pines dominated completely by the San Francisco Peaks, the 13,000-foot volcanic peak. How beautiful.
Then comes a gentle nudge. Summer monsoon storm clouds begin to gather. And we visitors don't need to be told this hike is over.
Some Republicans in the U.S. Senate want the climate change bill to focus on building new nuclear power plants. They're calling for as many as 100 new plants in 20 years. But the industry has been in decline for so many years now, there's concern there might not be enough nuclear engineers to do the job. Julie Grant reports.
There's a lot of new interest in nuclear energy and technology these days. But there's a problem. The American Nuclear Society estimates they need 700 new nuclear engineers per year to keep up with the growing demand. It's enough to give longtime nuclear supporters whiplash. Until recently, things looked gloomy for the nuclear industry. William Martin is chair of the Nuclear Engineering Department at the University of Michigan. 10 years ago, he says, no new plants were being designed or built, and he was having a tough time finding students.
A student entering the field, what you could tell them was, well, there's a big focus on waste, so that's not hardly something that excites young students to enter the field.
Martin remembers standing on the stage at graduation in the mid-1990s to call the names of his graduates. Other engineering departments had so many students it took an hour to call them all. But Martin only had a few names to call.
Our students trip across in about 10 seconds.
Lots of nuclear engineering programs didn't make it through the downtimes. There are less than half the university programs today than there were 30 years ago. Nuclear got a bad name starting in 1979 with the meltdown at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania. That was followed by the deadly nuclear accident at Chernobyl, Ukraine in the 80s. And by the early 1990s, President Clinton announced he would eliminate funding for nuclear power research and development. Until recently, there hasn't been an order for a new nuclear plant in 30 years. Vaughn Gilbert is spokesman for Westinghouse Electric Company, which focuses on nuclear energy. He says Westinghouse laid off a lot of its engineers in the down years. A decade ago, those who were left were heading toward retirement. So Gilbert says the company started working with universities to train engineering students to run its aging nuclear plants.
Simply because we knew we would need to attract new people to maintain the existing fleet and then also work with our customers to decommission the plants as they came offline.
Westinghouse and other nuclear companies started giving lots of money to maintain university programs. And then everyone started worrying about climate change and looking for ways to make energy that wouldn't create more greenhouse gases. Nuclear power has started making a comeback. Gilbert says new plants are in the works again, and Westinghouse needs engineers. The company's designs will be used in 6 new U.S. plants. The timing is pretty good for 25-year-old Nick Turan. He's a Ph.D. student in nuclear engineering at the University of Michigan. He knows there's a negative stigma to nuclear power because he's asked people about it.
Yeah, I'd just say, so, you know, what do you think about nuclear power? Just the passersby on the street. And one person just said, I only think one thing. No, 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 no.
But Turan says the negative stuff mostly comes from older people. When Three Mile Island melted down, Turan wasn't even born yet. He says most people his age are much more accepting of nuclear power.
You know, it's the people who remember Three Mile Island and remember Chernobyl and remember World War II who have all these sort of very negative associations of nuclear power with, you know, nuclear weapons and Soviet reactors that were built incredibly wrong and stuff like that.
Turan says much of his generation just sees a power source that doesn't create greenhouse gases. Of course, there are greenhouse gases created in the process of manufacturing nuclear fuel rods. And then there's that pesky problem of the spent nuclear waste. There's still no permanent place to dump it. Turan says he started studying nuclear power because he was amazed by it. But as the number of students in his department grows, he says more are choosing nuclear because it's a smart career choice. For the Environment Report, I'm Julie Grant.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can find more information and share your thoughts at environmentreport.org.
It's 5 minutes before 3 o'clock. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, a flash flood watch is in effect for DeWitt, Logan, McLean, and Sangamon counties until 7 o'clock this evening. Mike Solis forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, partly to mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Some locally heavy rainfall is likely. Highs between 78 in northern Indiana to 90 in southwestern Illinois. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows ranging from 62 in northwestern Illinois to 72 in the south. Tomorrow in northern Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms. The highs tomorrow ranging from 80 in the north to 88 in the far south. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, partly to mostly cloudy with periods of rain, the high 83, the wind from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms, most numerous during the evening. The low tonight, 68. The wind light and out of the southwest. Tomorrow, considerable cloudiness with showers and thunderstorms likely. The high 81. The wind tomorrow from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. There's a chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow night. The low 64. And the outlook for Wednesday, partly sunny with a chance of a few showers and thunderstorms. The high Wednesday, 85.
Earth and sky.
There are very few people left who do not accept as fact that the Earth is warming and that man is contributing to that trend.
You're listening to Dr. Albert Carnesale of UCLA. He's an expert on international affairs and security and chairman of a U.S. National Academy of Sciences Committee on America's Climate Choices. The committee has launched studies requested by our Congress to inform U.S. climate policy.
It's different in the sense that we were asked specifically, what should we be doing? What should be America's response to climate change?
97% of active U.S. climate scientists responding to a 2008 survey agree humans play a role in causing global warming. Dr. Carnesale said even in a tough economy like we've seen in 2009, limiting carbon emissions might lead to economic opportunities.
Well, for example, should we have a price on carbon that's emitted into the atmosphere as carbon dioxide? If the answer to that is yes, whether it's a tax or a cap and trade program, that will open opportunities for alternative energy. That's new kinds of jobs, new kinds of research and development.
We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future environment. It is part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information online at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
It's 2 minutes before 3 o'clock, 86 degrees in Urbana. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3.